like Rocky mentioned, you know, there's things we can learn from the Old Testament. We can see how God dealt with those in the past, and we can understand what He expects from us. We can see His great love that He's shown for His people, and well, His patience too. We'll see a lot of that. But those are things that we can always keep on our mind. Let me get all my stuff together here. In the main handout that I gave y'all. Well, before we go into that, I want to mention one thing here before I forget, because I probably would if I don't do it now. On the handouts that are the Joshua 1 and 2 in the back, you can see on my copy here that this I had one little section, just the first three verses, just to do a little marking, just to bring something out to our attention. But it doesn't look that good on the black and white. So that was a mistake on my part. So sorry about that. But as you'll see, the word the Lord spoke and saying were one color. And then Joshua, the son of Nun, is a different color. So if you'll just kind of follow that, and then you'll kind of, that'll be brought out to your attention. But I apologize. Next time, if I do something like that, I'll figure out another way to represent that marking that won't black out the copy when you do it in black and white. So, okay. So, on our last class, we looked at the kind of the overview or the introduction. I'm sorry, for Joshua, Judges, and Ruth, and we saw how that they flow together. And today we're just going to look at the introduction. We're just going to focus on Joshua itself and see some things that we might be able to gain from it before we actually dive into the book itself. So on the handout, the first thing I put on there was, who wrote Joshua? And that's a good question. It doesn't say for certain. There's thoughts on it. It could have been written by Joshua partially. We'll see here in a second. There's some issues that would come up as far as him being able to write the complete book. But the reason why I put on here that it's possible that he wrote part of it is some verses we can look at. If you look in chapter 5, we'll look at Joshua 5. We can start in verse 1. Now, this is one of those sections that it's good if you have different versions to look at, because you can bring, you'll see different things in the different versions. Now, verse 1, it says this term, they, let me read it. It says, now it came about when all the kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan to the west, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea, heard how the Lord had dried up the waters of the Jordan before the sons of Israel until they had crossed, that their hearts melted and there was no spirit in them any longer because of the sons of Israel. And the they that we were looking at is, make sure I've got the right they. Let me. Yes. Yes. Some of the manuscripts do show as we, because it is King James, New King James, American Standard Version, and the NIV. I believe all of those are going to use the term we. And that's kind of where I was getting to. Some of the versions say they, but then you have some versions that use the term we. So whoever is writing this is claiming to have, you know, been there. So now in Joshua 5:6, it's a little different. Get back over here. Because you'll see in Joshua 5:6, it uses the term us. So it said, for the sons of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness until all the nation, that is, the men of war who came out of Egypt, perished because they did not listen to the voice of the Lord, to whom the Lord had sworn that he would not let them see the land which the Lord had sworn to their fathers to give us. So we see in this verse, it does use a different terminology. It's not saying they, it's saying us, which is similar to the we. But from what I can understand, all the versions use the term us in 5:6, at least from what I could understand. So even the ones that use they in 5:1 use us in 5:6. And that's just something for us to consider, because we see that whoever is speaking, that they're using it in the sense that includes them. So, and again, that doesn't prove who it is. That doesn't prove that it's Joshua. It just shows that there could be a possibility. You know, that's basically all that's going to be able to prove. In Joshua 24:26, Joshua 24:26. Shows that he recorded a covenant that was made with Israel. Now, let's read it. It says, and Joshua wrote these words in the book of the law of God. And so we see this here, but that doesn't prove, again, that he is the one that recorded it here. So there's still a lot of things that, at least to me, that are unclear as far as being able to prove if he wrote it or who exactly wrote it. What did he write if he didn't write it? What's this talking about? Well, he wrote the words that are in the book of the law, but as far as did he write this whole book of Joshua, or did he record all that was written in that, I don't know. Because my bucket's bigger than Steve's. I'm going to have a I don't know bucket for sure. So, and I mean, if anybody has any thought on that, feel free to jump in.
The words that he's writing in 26, just to clarify, it's not talking about the entire book, it's talking about what right above the line.
Yes, right. It's not. I don't believe that it's talking about the entire book. Right, right.
I got a random question. Would it be of any consequence if Joshua didn't write the book? I mean, it's a book more of history of the Israelites and them going to the land of Canaan. So, would it make a difference if he didn't write it?
I don't see that it would, but because we still have the history. I mean, the Holy Spirit chose not to reveal everything about it. I mean, we see bits and pieces that we can look at this and we can say, well, maybe it's possible this happened or that happened. But really, when it comes down to it, it didn't come out and say, you know, who wrote it. And so I don't think that is the importance. Of course, it's not the importance of what we learn from Joshua. So, and any other thoughts? Or go ahead, Steve.
You were talking about in the class on Sunday that the end of each one of these books, the end of Deuteronomy, connect with the first part of Joshua.
Yes.
It's called the Colophon Principle. And those were put there by prophets. And that's what gave them authority to the Israelite nation. These were prophetic writings. It had the same thing with Joshua. I mean, with Judges and Ruth, and of course with Joshua and Judges. And so it's that prophetic link that you were talking about that gives credibility to these books as part of the Hebrew canon.
Yes.
And these verses that you referred to favor the fact that whoever wrote it, it was either contemporary or shortly within that time.
Okay.
Not 1,000 years later.
Right. Did y'all all hear Steve? Yes, sir.
Well, there's also several points in the book where it says, to this day.
Yes.
Now, when he raises his Ebenezer, the song we all sing a lot, it says, and it's still there to this day. You know, and the Jebusites were in Jerusalem, they're still there to this day.
Mm-hmm.
So whether Joshua wrote this book or not, and when it was written, somebody has gone through and added those passages. Say, all of this happened, and the evidences are still there. So, whether or not, like I said,
at that time, right, right. Because some of those, some of the to this day terminology, and I mean that's a good point. It does have a lot of that going on over and over, and that is something I chose not to put on the lesson because when going over some of it. When I was trying to pinpoint the some time as far as possibly when, you can use that terminology to figure out kind of some endpoints of when it would be or wouldn't be. But some of those to this day aren't necessarily to this day. You know, that was when it was at that time. Yes.
Somebody else would have had to have added that later. Now, you know, that doesn't affect whether Joshua wrote the majority of the text or somebody else did.
Right.
But one of the problems, and as Steve mentions it with his Colophon principle,
mm-hmm.
is that we have a tendency to look at books the way they're done today. And the people who were writing this stuff under the direction of the Holy Spirit had a different view of the books. You know, the, somebody adds Moses died the last part of Deuteronomy, and the people go all crazy that that proves that Moses couldn't have written this book, you know. That's maybe the way we do it now, but that's not the way it is.
Right. Well, and I understand on that principle, at least from what I understand about it, is I think that's only if it's done towards him, because we're going to read some parts here that is the reason why I was having some difficulty as far as saying when he was, that some of the stuff he had written, because if you look at Judges, we'll have some references that, well, when he's talking about this, he was already dead, you know, or whoever was writing about this. Certain things were already dead. And I understand that principle, but to have it where it is on some of this, where it's located in the book, kind of, to me, made it seem a little different than that normal way that that is set up. And, but it also, to me, means that some of this isn't chronological as well, because it wouldn't be able to be. And the way, because Joshua is referred to all throughout all 24 chapters, and you see in, what is it, I think 15, something is referenced, we'll look at in just a second, that if you look in Judges 1, it basically it's saying when this took place, Joshua was already dead. So that's why on some of this, I chose not to concentrate too much on some of the time frame. I mean, we would be able to nail down when it's, I mean, it's definitely, it's not way out here and all of that, but I didn't go into that part of it because some of it was as clear as mud to me. So, but we'll move on. Okay, so what I was just talking about, if you turn over to Joshua 15, and you'll have to bear with me, it's been a full day, so the brain doesn't work as well on Wednesday evening. So, yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Okay, in Joshua 15, let's start in verse 13. It says, now he gave to Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, a portion among the sons of Judah, according to the command of the Lord to Joshua. Namely, Kiriath Arba, Arba being the father of Anak, that is Hebron. And Caleb drove out from there the three sons of Anak, Sheshai, and Ahiman, and Talmai. And remember, I already said in the last class, don't go by the way I pronounce it. But that's just my attempt to pronounce these guys' names, the children of Anak. And then he went up from there against the inhabitants of Debir. Now the name of Debir was formerly Kiriath Sefer. And let's move on up to, let me jump over to Judges 1:3 real quick. See exactly what terminology it was using. Okay, so if we at Judges 1:1 says, now it came about after the death of Joshua that the sons of Israel inquired of the Lord, saying, who shall go up first for us against the Canaanites to fight against them? So we see here that Joshua is dead. So when it was what we were looking at in Joshua 15, it was talking about some of what had just taken place. So in 17, Othniel, the son of Kenaz, the brother of Caleb, captured it. So he gave it to his wife. And it came about that when she came to him, she persuaded him to ask her father for a field. And so he alighted from the donkey. And Caleb said to her, what do you want? Then she said, give me a blessing. And since you have given me the land of the Negev, give me also the springs of water. So he gave her the upper springs and the lower springs. And that's what I was looking for. Oh, I see where I was at. I need to go a little further in Judges. So if you look at Judges 1, I think maybe it's verse 9. Okay. And after the sons of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites living in the hill country and in the Negev and in the lowland. So Judah went against the Canaanites who lived in Hebron. Now the name of Hebron, okay.
Verse 15, it talks about, she said to him, give him a blessing since you have given him the land.
Thank you. That's what I'm looking for. I'm telling you, I'm having a rough day. Thank you, Keith. I appreciate that. So that's what I was looking for. I knew it was over here, but I had referenced quite a long stretch there, so verse 15. Thank you, Keith. And she said to him, give me a blessing, since you have given me the land of the Negev. Give me also the springs of water. So Caleb gave her the upper springs and the lower springs. So we see here that this is referencing what we had already looked at in Joshua 15. So basically, and it just said in 1:1 that Joshua is dead at this point. So basically, if you consider Joshua 15 what was referenced there, whenever that was in this point of time, Joshua's already dead. So that, well, for me, one thing that tells us that it can't be chronological in the order that things are moving around. And possibly that would make it a difficulty of him writing the whole book. Again, yes, there's the Coffin Principle, but I don't know enough about that principle. If that is just the ending, is that tagged just towards the ending of
the next book?
Okay. Right.
The prophetic writing.
But as far as if, since we see it here in verse 15 or in chapter 15, you wouldn't use that as the same type of principle as far as.
Well, that's just a chronological thing showing Joshua didn't write that.
Right, okay. Well, that's what I was thinking, but.
It was happening.
Okay.
But you've got another point you gave to. It's written before Saul.
Yes.
Exodus occurred in, say, 1450, and Saul began reigning about 1,000.
Mm-hmm.
That gives you a time frame in which the book was written.
Yes, and that's another point. I'm glad you brought out the charts. I have borrowed the charts from Steve, and it was brought up the other day. I was asked if we were going to be going over them. We're not going to go into detail on the charts, but they will be helpful to you as you're considering these things and as you're reading, to give you kind of an idea of the timelines, and, you know, keeping in mind that these three books that we're looking at are under that Jewish dispensation. So everything that they're dealing with would be dealing with the law of Moses. So they would be under that. But just to keep that in mind. So who is this Joshua? What do we know about him? I had put a couple of things down there, and I have some to add. No, I don't. Yep, I got one thing to add. But I'm trying to remember what all I put on y'all's lessons versus mine. But when you consider Joshua, because when you think about what we're going to be looking at and the people dealing with him, so do they know who this Joshua is? I mean, they would be familiar with him, wouldn't they? If you look at Numbers 13:1. Numbers 13:1, it says, the Lord spoke to Moses saying, and he was about to speak about the ones that were to spy out the land of Canaan. And the end of verse 2, he says, you shall send a man from each of their father's tribes. So every one of them, a leader among them. And end of verse 3, these men were the ones that were the heads of the sons of Israel. So we see that we're about to see that Joshua is one of these in verse 8. We'll look at that in a second. But so that being said, Joshua is a leader among these people. Well, he's a head of this tribe of Ephraim. So in verse 8, it says his name was Hoshea. He was the son of Nun. And we'll see that again in verse 16. But it says in verse 8, from the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea, the son of Nun. And then down in verse 16, it says the names, or these are the names of the men who Moses sent to spy out the land. But Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua. So that's where we start seeing the term Joshua. And also, if you look in Deuteronomy 32, And it says, then Moses came and spoke all the words of this song in the hearing of the people. He was Joshua, the son of Nun. Reason why I mention that, because your version might have a footnote. If you're in the New American Standard, it might have a footnote that says literally Hoshea. And I think it's American Standard, King James, and maybe Young's Literal Translation uses the word Hoshea. Is that the... helps if you're in verse 44, not 45. Okay, yes. So in those versions, American Standard, King James, and Young's Literal Translation, I don't know what all versions y'all look at, but you'll see that term Hoshea in it also. And there's not a lot of importance on this. This is just something that I was bringing up because it was mentioned in the verses here twice in chapter 13. So I thought it would be good to just note that. Now we also know that, see if I put it down there, Lord. In Exodus 17, verse 8, Moses tells him to the battle against Amalek. That's what I'm looking for. Verse 9 says, Moses told Joshua, or said to Joshua, choose men for us and go out, fight against Amalek. Tomorrow I will station myself on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand. And Joshua did as Moses told him and fought against Amalek. And Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. If you jump down to verse 13, it says, so Joshua overwhelmed Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. So we see that he was to choose these men and that they defeated Amalek in this battle. Evidently, he is also trustworthy. Moses tells him to do that, you know, to choose these men and go out and fight. So we also see that he's a leader. He led this battle and defeated Amalek. And as we already mentioned, he was a leader of a tribe. He was one of the 12 leaders sent out to spy the land. And he was one of the two leaders that gave an honest and good report of what he saw, you know, him and Caleb. So we know that from Numbers 14. He was also a servant of Moses. And I wanted to put that on there because there's some things I think we can draw from that that we'll see more once we get into to Joshua 1:1 and further. But it mentions it in 1:1 when it starts off saying that Joshua was a servant of Moses. And I listed some references to look at, Exodus 24, Numbers 11, Exodus 33. And depending on which version you're using, Exodus 24:13 shows, in some of the versions, uses the term assistant. And in Numbers 11:28, it actually used it four different times from the different versions that I looked up, or four different ways, because in American Standard and the Young's Literal, it calls him a minister. The English Standard and New King James calls him an assistant. King James Version, a servant, and then New American Standard said attendant. And I'm just saying all that just to say, you know, it's given some different terminologies or things we could think about when it's saying that he was the servant of Moses. But it also noted, or at least I noticed in two of the verses, it has reference, time reference, if you will, because it states that of his age, or he was a young man. It was Exodus 33:11 said his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man. And Numbers 11:28, he was a servant of Moses from his youth. And the reason why I wanted to put that on there is just for us to consider. He had been around Moses for a while. So when we start looking into some of these chapters and some of the things that are said to Joshua, then we might think about, for instance, we won't go much into it because it's in a different lesson, but he's told to be strong and courageous. And we'll look at, well why? Why is he to be strong and courageous? And you think about some of the things that Moses had to deal with. Moses, he trusted in the Lord, but there were still things he had to deal with these people. And, well, Joshua sees that. So does that affect some of the way he thinks of things? Is he going to be needing to have some encouragement? Just things to think about. And that's why I wanted to mention this idea of that he was a servant of Moses since a young age. Because he's definitely seen Moses in action, if you will. He's seen the way people have dealt with him. So, and we'll look, like I said, we'll see more of that when we get into some of the other classes. And Numbers 27, verse 18 through 23. We just see here that Moses is commissioned. Said, so the Lord said to Moses, take Joshua the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand on him, and have him stand before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation, and commission him in their sight. And you shall put some of your authority on him, in order that all the congregation of the sons of Israel may obey him. Moreover, he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire for him by the judgment of Urim before the Lord. At his command they shall go out, and at his command they shall come in, both he and the sons of Israel with him, even all the congregations, or congregation. And Moses said, just as the Lord commanded him, and he took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation. Then he laid his hands on him and commissioned him, just as the Lord had spoken through Moses. In Deuteronomy 3, Deuteronomy 3:21, it says, "And I commanded Joshua at the time, saying, your eyes have seen all that the Lord your God has done to these two kings, and the Lord shall do all the kingdoms into which..." Let me say that again. "The Lord shall do to all the kingdoms into which you are about to cross. Do not fear them, for the Lord your God is the one fighting for you." So we see in verse 22 that he's not to fear. The Lord is the one that is fighting, fighting for you or for him. And in verse 28, Moses was told to charge Joshua. But let's look at what it says. It says, "But charge Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him. For he shall go across at the head of this people, and he shall give them as an inheritance the land which you will see." So we see that idea that he might need some encouragement. He might need to be strengthened. Again, consider the things he's seen. But on the other hand, consider the things he's seen. He knows what God can do. You know, that's why when it says in verse 22, you know, "Do not fear, for the Lord is fighting for you. He's on your side." So, you know, it's not that he doesn't believe in that, but there's still something that, or you get the idea that he still needs to be strengthened or needs some encouragement. Not that he doubts God, but again, and that could be some of the dealings with the people or any of that. Those are factors that he's seen before. Now, it doesn't state that right here, but just to consider for our thought. Are there any comments or anything? I'm just talking away up here.
It's interesting that you mentioned Joshua as Moses' servant. Mm. Joshua later said he was 40 years old when he went to scout out the land. They use young man a little different way.
Yes.
But be that as it may, and then you have the 38 years of wilderness wandering, so that adds at least another, that makes him 78. And possibly some more. Josephus said he was 85 when he took command to conquer the land. But he was somewhere around 80 at least. And yet here he is, God selecting him to do this. What's also interesting, as the servant of Moses, you never see the pride and jealousy that was evident in Korah, Achan, and Abiram toward Moses and Aaron. He was satisfied in his role until the time came for him to take the leadership.
Yes. Yes, sir. Rocky, do you have a comment?
Yes, Craig, I was going to mention about these verses about Josh. It's clear that he was a great leader, and definitely a military leader. But he was also the pride of Ephraim. When we get to the major prophets and minor prophets, there'll be a term we will find in the prophets referring to the ordination, and the term will be Ephraim, either Israel or the Northern Kingdom. One thing that's noted about Joshua and being the tribe of Ephraim, and he was a great leader. And also remember who Ephraim's dad was, Joseph. So Ephraim evidently had pride as a really strong leader, especially Joshua. And the northern kingdom became known by the prophets was called Ephraim, most possibly because of a great leader like Joshua.
Okay, thank you.
Look at Joshua. You know, you mentioned about he still needs to be strengthened and encouraged, and you kind of look at what he saw, what he went through. Like Rocky said, what type of a leader he was. You know, first off, you know, he rose to the occasion.
Right.
You know, he wasn't jealous, or he wasn't trying to usurp Moses and Aaron. He waited his time, but what he saw and the willingness to take on the role and responsibility given to him, especially at the age that he was. And you see that, you know, his faith, we know him as a, I guess we know him from Joshua 24. Well, me and my house, we serve the Lord. But think about, you know, the battle against Amalek. Go out there and, you know, you're going to win or lose based on Moses holding his hands up and God either, you know, favoring, you know, the Amalek or Joshua based on that.
Right.
You've got to have faith that, that God's going to take care of you in that way. And then you're going to go through and you're going to see the hardships that Moses went through. And he was there constantly. And then you see, you know, he was a man of, you would think that he would be a man of renown by the time the end of the Wanderings was around, because he was one of the only two men of that age range left over.
Yeah.
And after having seen how stubborn the people were, you know, he still was willing to take on that responsibility. And then, as Rocky said, that the tribe of Ephraim became known for their leaders and that sort of stuff. Without getting too far into your material, but I like the end of Joshua 24:31, where it talks about Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua.
And the elders.
The elders who survived Joshua and had known all the deeds of the Lord which he had done to Israel, done for Israel. The idea being that he was a great leader and he set the example. Not only was it they lived through Joshua's lifetime, but all the elders served for Joshua. That was the type of leader he was. And so to me, it adds to that. It's not just me and my house, we will serve the Lord. He walked the walk, he talked the talk, and he had an impact on those around him.
Yes.
And we should be able to. We should be able to relate to that from the standpoint of we can do what he did. And you may face hard times. It was a hard task. You know God's with you, but it doesn't mean you don't need encouragement. Elijah, after slaying the prophets of Baal, you know, he still needed encouragement even though he had God on his side. You know, you need that from time to time. But we can persevere. We should rise to that occasion so we can strengthen others and they can strengthen us.
Yep. All good comments. Are you about to buzz me, Neil? Okay. Just the last little part at the end of your lesson, I just basically split it up into four little sections that we'll look at starting in chapter 1. But chapters 1 through 5, the children of Israel prepare to enter into the land. And then 6 through 12, the conquest of the land. 13 through 21, the allotment of the land. And then 22 through 24, Israel to serve the Lord that gave them the land. So I appreciate y'all's comments and your patience with me today. And again, if you didn't get a lesson, I have Joshua 1 and 2 in the back there. So please pick that up. And we will start on Joshua 1 next class. Thank you.